Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with Mark Van Kersbilk. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You could subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today, I spoke with the sole proprietor and operator of Haas Trading LLC, Mark Van Kersbilk. Mark has been a cattle trader for over 25 years, so I kicked off today's chat with him telling us how he became a cattle trader. He tells us how he blends fundamentals and technicals in his strategy, gives us insight on the hog market, explains why and how he uses options on futures when the meats are volatile. Mark gives us an example of a recent cattle trade from soup to nuts, and last but not least, we go beyond the charts, and Mark explains how hunting and fishing have helped him become a better trader. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Mark. How did you get involved in trading futures?
Well, kind of a long story, but I was playing college football at the University of Oklahoma in 1985, and then my sophomore year, they would put us into good jobs anyway. So I started working for a company called Barnes Brokerage, which was in Edmond, Oklahoma, about 45 miles north of Norman, which is where OU's at. And I would work there 3 months out of the summer for my sophomore, junior, and senior year. And after I graduated in the spring of 1990, I was offered a chance by Bill Barnes to come to Chicago. And at that time, they were big ag traders on the Merck floor, and they offered me an opportunity to come up to Chicago and kind of feel the business and see if I wanted to go along that route. Well, me being kind of like a country boy at heart, born and raised outside of a town called Shawnee, Kansas, and spending 4.5 years in Norman, Oklahoma, I went up to Chicago for like maybe 4 days to check it out, and I was just overwhelmed. It just really set me back. I just wasn't used to all the hustle and bustle. So I didn't really turn it down, but I didn't really accept it. So then I moved back to Kansas City for maybe 6 months, and I sold pharmaceutical supplies. And then I just knew I wasn't going to go anywhere working for somebody. And I was just, you know, I just kind of needed to work for myself. So I called up Bill and asked him if that opportunity was still there. And he's like, he set it up for me. So literally maybe 3 weeks later, my younger brother packed me up in a U-Haul with a mattress, a TV, and two chest of drawers, and I had enough money to get 6 months rent at Presidential Tires, downtown Chicago, and I just started from there. So Bill set me up with Len Waldock, where I would, in the mornings, back then everything was on one floor at the Merck, the euro dollars and the currencies and everything were all on one floor. We hadn't gone two-tiered yet at that time. So I would run in the mornings in the currency desk for Len Waldock, run the orders into the Swiss, wherever it had to go. And then at about 8:30, I would help a guy by the name of Barney Brannigan, who was Barnes's basically broker slash trader for them on the floor in the cattle pit. And I would help him out and just kind of learn the business. At that time, the cattle pit opened at 9:05 and closed at 1. And so I would help him during that time and then, you know, execute the orders, bring the orders into him that was from Barnes and everywhere else. And then I'd have a little lunch break, and then I'd go run in the S&Ps in the afternoon until they closed. And then I would go in Lynn Waldock's back office and learn the process of checking out orders and all that stuff and making sure the orders correlated with the right accounts and all that kind of stuff back before the electronic and all that kind of stuff. So that's how I got started. And then once I got on the floor, I started to at least an ILM seat, which would allow me to execute option orders. But those guys in Edmond weren't big option traders, so that was kind of a slow death there. So then I started at least a gold seat, the CME seat, which allowed me to trade in the cattle pit. And then once I started in there, after a couple months, I had Dean Klenis, who was an order filler in the second month of cattle pit, approached me to see if I had any interest in becoming an order filler deck holder in the front month cattle, at which I took him up on it. And then years later, everything worked out. And it was a, you know, so I just kind of learned it from the bottom up back in those days.
Yeah, I mean, I started at Lynn Waldock too. It seems like everybody starts there, doesn't it?
Yeah, because they were kind of like the low end, right? They were kind of like the chop house, right? Everybody that wanted to save the money back in those days and those rates and stuff always cleared them.
Yeah.
So, that's where I started. And it was, I love those guys at the desk. Literally back in those days, the cattle pit was maybe 15 yards or so from the Lynn Waldock hotwire desk. So they would have a direct access. They just pick up the phone for the Merck or the Board of Trade. They have a hotline to both of them. And they would just, you know, send the orders in, and I would stand there if I wasn't in the pit and take the orders in to Barney or whomever was executing in that day for them, and just kind of learned it from, you know, from the ground up.
What was their house number again? Was it 532?
532.
532.
Yep, 532.
It's funny how I still remember that. Talk to us a little bit about how you learned how to trade back in those days, because I think that many people are under the impression that pit traders traded either the same or very similar. But we both know that's not the case. There are so many different types of pit traders. So how did you learn how to trade? And what were the deciding factors in you choosing your strategy in your trading?
Well, I kind of got my break. I didn't, like I said, I was never into the come up years in college. And even then, I wasn't even trading. I was just trying to learn it. But at that time, I had aspirations of playing in the NFL and all that stuff. So I was just, this is just going to get me through the summer, enough money and stuff to survive the next year. But anyways, once I moved to Chicago and I started filling in the front month, I always had the security of always having an income of brokering. You know, so I would get paid on filling the orders, executing the orders for whoever sent them to me. So I didn't really just like jump in there with being like 10 or 20 grand and have to make it for the first year. Thankfully, I had that to back up on, because my first year and a half, 2 years, like everybody, you know, it seemed so easy when I was a runner. I mean, how many of the runners would sit there and take the, you know, the cards, the buy and sell cards, and say, all right, I'm going to buy 10, you know, June cattle right here at 121 even, and you timestamp it. And then like 3 weeks later, you go back to the other guy and say, okay, look, the cattle are at 124. I just made $3. Well, that may be good and true, but they might have gone to 115 first, you know, so you might have gotten scared out in that whole time. So every paper trade I made never lost. You know, I never lost on paper trades because I just stayed with it until it turned right.
Didn't matter how
much I was out in paper. But then, like I always tell my kids, the best lesson is, you don't really learn anything until it costs you money. And then when it costs you money, you learn, you know, or you try to, or you're not going to be in the business very long. So I always tell both my daughters, I tell them, you know, I've been 23 and 25. You all have never been 52. So I've done everything you've done. So you're never going to get one over on me. Kind of same way in trading, until you actually get in there and experience it and go home, you know, and want to kick the dog because you lost on what you knew was a right trade, but you got stopped out because you couldn't take the heat. And then the next day the market opens 200 higher and you're like, you know, I knew I was right. I just couldn't stand the heat. But that's what you have to start trying to implement, is bankroll management, I like to call it now. And it's so much changed over the past 25 years, you know, in the cattle pit back in those days. If you got a dollar move a week, that was pretty substantial. I mean, back in those days, you'd have 80,000-85,000 total open interest. Now, you know, one contract can get, I mean, we just hit a record in the June contract of 2019 for over 204,000, I think, in one contract. And back in the 90s, we would have 80,000 total open interest in the entire cattle market. So when the influx of money comes in now, it just inundates the market. I mean, it just, you know, for a domestic cattle market, when these funds get 140 to 180,000 net longs on, that's almost two times, three times what the market used to be back in the 90s and early 2000s total. So these guys will just come in and just run over a market. And hopefully you're on the right side of it, because sometimes when they liquidate, it takes the market much further than it should really go.
I love how you said that, you know, you never really had a mistake or never had a loser on a paper trade, because that's something that I learned as well. I think most people that have started off paper trading is that you never have a loser. And then what you learn is it's actually easy to know where the market's going to go, but the hard part is executing the journey.
Exactly. Right. When to get in, timing, everything, how much risk, reward, you know, all those kind of things, which as the computer age has taken over, those things have had to quickly implement. Otherwise, you know, the volatility in some of these markets, like we were just talking about earlier, Anthony, before we got on, is the corn. I mean, literally the corn 2 weeks ago was trading at, July corn was trading at $3.45 a bushel. Now, this morning it opened, it got as high as $4.30 a bushel. So, I mean, it's 20% of the contract value in the past 10 trading days for 2 weeks. And it's just, you know, if you're long, it's great. But if you're short, you know, when do you pull the trigger to get out? Because it just keeps going and going and going. And that is very hard. I mean, so almost all my trades, I'll put in a time frame and or a price. So, for instance, let's say I want to be long June cattle on whatever. Let's just say May 30th. Let's just use that example. I want to be long June cattle at May 30th and or if they get down to 108 and change prior to that time. So that's when I want to get long or short, I'll kind of set my rules on that stage and try and stick to them. And at first, I wasn't very good at sticking to them because I always thought the fundamental news would override the wave of the funds being short or long. And it's just changed so dramatically. In the early days of the market, back when I was in them in the 90s and 2000s, the fundamentals would lead the cattle market. Now, the funds lead the fundamentals, you know, whether they're blowing out or adding the longs or adding the shorts. So it's so different because of the influx of these huge money funds and on the domestic product that really, you know, it's kind of getting overwhelmed by how big a positions these people have on. And the market really isn't made to sustain that kind of stuff. So when we go probably at least, I would say at least 20 to 30% further than we normally would back in the day, if not further, just because of their positions and how they get in and get out.
I'm curious, because you have seen so much over your career, so much change in how markets trade, what are some things that you learned early in your career that you still use to trade now?
Open interest, patterning open interest, because in the cattle, it's a physical deliverable contract. So once you get through what's called first notice day, which is it's the day, the Monday after the last Friday of the month. So options expire for, let's say, for instance, for the June contract, they'll expire the last Friday in May. Then that preceding Monday is first notice day. So therefore, almost all the CTAs and all the funds have in their bylaws that they cannot take physical delivery of anything. So therefore, they will all be out by first notice day. So then some of my most successful trades were based off of, once you get the market into the delivery mode, the fundamentals take over. So the funds are not in that market and they can't make it move, you know, $4 or $5 a day because of their swings. So it eliminates 98% of all the fund money in there after first notice day. And therefore, the market will trade more fundamental. Now, you may only get, you know, a total of 21 trading days or so in that time frame, but most of the time, the market acts like it should because your open interest is down to a reasonable number. You don't have these big influx of funds coming in and just moving the market. So therefore, that's when I used to do, you know, when I used to trade the fundamental spreads and stuff. And I would always base it off of the open interest because obviously, human instinct is always like to be long. Everybody likes to see the market go up. But the money is most of the time is made three times as fast on the downside because of the panic elements in it. So I would always take open interest and divide it by however many days are left. If there's 20,000 open and there's 20 trading days left in the June, basically you have to liquidate 1,000 a day to get down to zero by the time it's all done. And the bigger the open interest was in those days, the less time you had to get down. And that usually was an infiltrator. The longs always stay the longest. It just seems like it always would stay. And so when I would catch the biggest trades was the open interest versus the day's trading, and it, when it was at the lowest. And that usually precipitated a move upward if it, the fundamentals justified it. And that's when the market was a true market, because it would trade like it used to back in the 90s and early 2000s when the fundamental news would drive it.
You mentioned that you're using fundamentals. Are you using any technicals?
Yeah, I've been a subscriber to Carry Artek since probably at least 20-something years. I think I was one of his first couple clients, Artek Advisory, and I used him forever and still do. And I use, I got Nick Stanton, who's worked for me for many years on the floor, and he's a big technical guy. I'm pretty much a fundamentalist because the people I know and did all the business for on my floor days are huge cattle guys out of Amarillo, Mike Smith and Alvin Foltz of Tahoe Trading. They're the guys that I used to implement all their hedging and everything on and their spec trades on the floor. And they, these guys were massive, massive traders. And I still have a good rapport with them and relationship with them. And they are 100% fundamental traders. Even though it's kind of like the dinosaur of the age now, the fundamental trader and the ags, there's still a few of us left, but most people are more technical now, you know, looking at the 20 days and the 40 days and 100 days and that kind of stuff. I use that, but fundamentals are the way that usually direct me. And sometimes if we're overbought or oversold, if we're oversold and I want to be short, it may keep me from getting in the market and wait for a little bit of a corrective bounce. But most of the time, the fundamental trader just, you know, got to believe that his fundamentals are right, and they just go with it.
How do you blend the two, fundamentals and technicals, to eventually then pull the trigger on a trade?
Yeah, most of the time it's entry point. So if I know the funds, like the last couple months here, we've been immense, huge longs in the funds, and I've been kind of friendly to the market. But then once the June contract took out a big number, it's like 118 and a half. I think we had a couple gaps down there. Once we took that out on the downside, I knew fundamentals didn't matter because I knew the funds were record long and I knew they were going to start liquidating. And then the game is, how long are they going to liquidate and are they going to go short? You know, so they took the market. Basically, the June contract was trading 122, you know, 6-8 weeks ago. And now we're down to 111 with a low of like 109 and change a couple weeks ago. So when, you know, they'll push the market $6 to $8, $10 getting in and getting out. And so once it gets to that level, even though you're fundamentally bullish, you know, there's no reason to fight that battle. So you just get out and look for the area to consolidate, how far it goes down and what the percentage basis is. I do a lot of 20-year research of the April cattle went off the board at this price. Over the past 20 years, the June cattle's average price is 3.5% less than where the April went off the board. And of the past 20 years, the worst scenario the June cattle's ever gone off the board is, let's just say, 10%. So I use that as a stick measure to where if I want to get long. Let's say the June went off the board, or April went off the board at 120. In the past 20 years, the worst the June has ever gone off is 10% less than that. So then I would wait till they got to 110 if I wanted to get long and implement a long position from 110, because just use a 20-year average. And that would be the, you know, the worst case scenario or best case scenario for me where I want to get in, because most of the time those 20-year averages work and the market will come back. And instead of going off at 10%, it goes off the 20-year average of like 4.5%, something like that. And I've had success with that, but that's just Excel spreadsheet every day or every expiring month and going back 20 years and just keeping the records and just putting them in after the next month expires. So when June goes off here in another month, whatever price it goes off at, then I'll use it for the August cattle and see what the best case scenario is over the past 20 years and the worst case scenario. And if the worst case scenario is where they're trading at now and I'm friendly, then I'll go ahead and get long, because over the past 20 years, this has been the worst decline. And we've had some crazy gyrations in that time, you know, 9/11, the banking industry, all kinds of stuff, mad cow, everything's been in there. So the influx is pretty good data on that stuff.
A lot of news going on these days in the hog market. Give us your thoughts on what you're seeing right now in the hog market.
Well, I'm not really what you call a hog guru, but I mean, I can read the information and see what's going on with the lack of this ASF disease that's hit China, Vietnam, all these places like that. And more than anything, it's probably really difficult for them, those countries, to give us factual information. So I got to believe it's probably a lot worse than what they're leading up to. So like I was telling you earlier, I mean, I think I could see, you know, if that disease hit us, I could see the hogs going to $55. And if it, the tariffs and stuff get lifted, I could see the hogs going to $125. I mean, it's just so crazy which way they could go, and they could go both. And I was jokingly saying, you know, I think I might buy the 120 calls and then buy the 60 puts and just look for a huge volatility move one way or the other. And that's extreme, but it's probably what's going to happen, because I got to believe that in order for them to sustain some kind of proteins over there, if this is even half right, it's going to be unbelievable for the next couple of years for the ag markets and protein wise.
So how do you go about trading this type of an environment?
Calls and call spreads, because that's, the volatility is so high. The only way you can really trade them with any, you know, margin is without breaking an account and still have enough on where if you're right, you can make a good hit. It's call spreads, you know? So obviously your upside is limited, but you know your risk, you know, and you're not like the hogs literally have had $7 moves in a week. And so you're not, you know, having a stand at your desk, having your heart attack, watching these $5 and $6 moves up and down. At least you know you're in, and eventually the fundamentals will kick in. It may take 6 months, may take a year, may take the tariffs being lifted. Who knows what it's going to take? But one of these days, we're going to come in, and they're either going to be, you know, limit up for 10 days or limit down for 10 days, or one or the other. And when that happens, if you're just had your call spread on, you know your risk reward right from the very beginning, and it makes you sleep a lot easier at night.
So options are what you go do when you see these headlines impacting the market, and you know that there could be wild swings in either direction. And exactly. Earlier you mentioned that you use fundamentals and technicals. We talked a little bit about how you'll blend the two. Specifically for this type of situation, when you see these headlines, and like I said, you know that the moves can be so dramatic, are you using technicals at all to help you execute when you're trading options?
Well, the problem is volatility is probably the biggest implementation of options. You know, I mean, volatility 25-30%, it's really hard to buy calls, you know, I mean, because you're paying so much more. But, you know, do you really want the uneasiness of being outright long a couple versus having, you know, 10 calls on or something like that? That's really what it comes down to, is your threshold of pain, with or without. And I seem to, if I have a, you know, an idea like 6-8 months out, I put on a call spread, and then that way I will just slowly implement it. It may take me, you know, 2 weeks to get it all the way on, you know, one or two a day, and just slowly ease into them. I've had call spreads on where I put them on where it's cost me $4, and then by the time I get done, I'm picking up $3 on the same exact trade over a 2 week implementation of it. So, you know, you're just trying to average in where you think you can get it. But I mean, that's how crazy some of these markets are. Like I know last year, about this time, about maybe in July or August, I was very, this is 2018. So 2019, this February market of 2019, I was bullish. And the Fed cattle at that time were trading down to like 110. So I did a 118, 128 call spread, and then sold the 104 puts against it to finance it. Now, that was 8 months, 9 months, but it was right, and it just took, you know, you just have to have the foresight and patience just to slowly implement it, and then you, when you're in it, you sit, and you don't have to sit here and gyrate with every daggum move that goes throughout the day and, you know, and be mad one day, happy the next, mad the next, because the moves in the market. This way, you just have an even keel, and you know eventually, if you're right, you're going to make your money, and if you're wrong, you know what your risk is.
You've already given us some examples of some trade scenarios that you've done, but what I'd like to do is really just hear one from soup to nuts, beginning to end. Talk to us about a scenario where you noticed something happening in the fundamentals, then went and looked at the charts, and I'm assuming you're using the charts like we talked about a little bit for confirmation, you know, maybe help a little bit with your execution, and then how you went about executing that trade.
Well, most of the time when I'm fairly in market, I mean, like every market has seasonals. And usually our seasonals are from late winter to early spring, depending on demand time. So I know there's many scenarios like right now where demand should be great. But the problem is the weather in the United States for the past 4 weeks has been raining every weekend, every flooding and all this stuff. So it's really hurt demand. So therefore, that usually means a later demand period. So normally the August cattle, which is usually the, you know, the market's worst performer. So that could offer some interesting down the road here if the beef market picks up and we get some demand. So normally the August cattle, you know, goes off the board the worst of almost all the markets every year. But there has been time, and I can't remember the exact year, where I've seen this before, where do we have a very late spring, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's normal summer doldrums, but you get this huge spring demand because people were pent up and didn't do, you know, the grilling and stuff because of the weather. So something like that, if the market in the August cattle, let's say, for example, like right now down at 107, if that market, I think the low side on that market is down around 102, 103. So if something would happen prior to that, to get down there, I would implement some kind of a call spread just because of the fact that I think the demand may come a lot later. Normally we're done with the springtime demand middle of June, but this may let it go even longer through the 4th of July and that kind of stuff, which is usually the summer doldrums. So if I'm looking to do, there's a couple things I'm looking to do on that line, even further out. And you just put every morning, I'll put my plan here, what I want to do, and then just I'll tweak it every once in a while. But most of the time, I'll have my point where I want to enter and or a time frame when I want to enter. And if I'm lucky, they both kind of coincide within a week of each other. And then I just get in. And if I believe my fundamentals and believe in the charts and everything, if I'm right, I'll know within a couple of weeks. And if I'm wrong, I just, you know, I have my risk reward pattern in there. And if it gets through there, I just get out and look for a different one. It's kind of like, you know, the old relief pitcher. You know, you can't remember, even if you gave up 2-run home run in the bottom of the night before, you come out the next day, you still got to believe in yourself and throw it down the middle and hope you, you know, hope you blow it by them. You can't be scared of the day before.
It sounds to me like a lot of your strategy is discretionary, right? You're looking at the fundamental picture and then you're looking to see what the technicals are telling you. So I'm curious, what is it about your strategy that you believe gives you an edge and really separates you from other traders?
Well, mainly my connections in the market and how long I've been there. You know, I've been trading since 1991. You know, so I would say that nothing doesn't trick me, but nothing surprises me anymore. But yet, I'm still surprised monthly with some of these moves that happen. And it's just the, like we were talking about earlier, you know, it's just the battle that you enjoy so much. You know, like we were saying, a lot of traders, floor traders, or ex-athletes of some sort, and they just love the competition of getting in there and proving yourself right and implementing. So I think implementation of a trade now is so much more important than it was 15 years ago. I mean, you could get in the market 15 years ago, and if you were kind of wrong, you may have taken a $2 heat. Now, if you're kind of wrong, you can take $10 worth of heat, and you may be eventually right, but can you really withstand the $10 worth of heat before you get in? No. So the timing and implementation of a trade is almost the most important thing of the actual trade.
I'm curious what you do beyond the charts. Are you doing anything to help you as a trader when you're away from the screens? Sports, like you talked about a little bit. What are you doing when you're not trading?
Well, I'm an avid hunter and fisherman. I've got my brother and I have about 600 acres in Warrensburg, Missouri that we've had for the past like 30 years, and we've really made it into a really nice hunting camp. It's got a big old 24-acre lake on it, plus multiple little ponds. It's loaded with deer, turkey, bass, crappie, and a couple guys that I live in Edmond, Oklahoma now since I moved out of Chicago, since the floor closed, and my biggest customers back in the day and still who I talk to now, Mike and Alvin from Tejas Trading, they live in Amarillo. And Mike is a self-made, I think he's in the top 30 private landowners in the entire United States. And he was just a self-made guy, cattle trader in the 70s, a buyer, and just every penny he made, he bought into real estate, and now he's got these unbelievable ranches. I mean, he's got a 220,000-acre ranch northwest of Amarillo. And then about 5 weeks ago or so, I went down to his ranch in East Texas. That was like 12,000 acres, just a little piece of land, like 12,000 acres. And I went fishing. He's got these unbelievable bass lakes on there, and caught three of the biggest bass of my life. I caught, you know, two of them over 9 pounds and one of them over 8. And it's just something else. I mean, that makes you forget about a bad trade when you're out on the lake catching 9 pound bass, that's for sure.
So you attest a lot of that growth in walking away from bad trades, or healing after bad trades, from things that you're doing when you're not at the screens.
Yes, and waiting, that's for sure. Getting out and then clearing your head and waiting for the next trade. Because once you have a bad trade, you know, you just don't want to hop back in and put on another bad trade. You know, when things are going good, if you're long and you've been long for months, you can just keep rolling your longs until it gets to a point where, you know, you've made enough money on the trade or you don't want to risk it going against you. Those kind of things. The hardest thing are getting out of a loser, and then your next couple may be small losers. But then when you get in the right trade, is letting it work for you. And that's almost as hard as getting out, you know, is when to get out of a profitable trade as opposed to when to get out of a losing trade. Because sometimes, you know, you may make $5 or $6 on a trade, but you may leave 6 or 8 on the table, you know, and those things, you know, when it gets going your way, you got to ride it, because it's so few and far between when you hit these big winners that when you get on them, you got to let them ride.
Do you find that you make a lot of your money in moments, or is it really just a grind throughout the year?
Used to day trade all the time and make little bits, you know, here, there. Now I'm more at the big picture, because I think the way the algorithms and stuff work, day trading is not, it just doesn't happen anymore. You know, there's been days when I walk in and I'm like, I want to buy this, whatever the hog market today, because the news is good. And they may open 100 higher, and it's really hard to pull the trigger when something opens 100 higher, and because you think everybody knows the same thing you do, and next thing you know, they're 300 higher and you didn't pull the trigger. So that's why it's so key to keep in mind and write down where you want to implement it, what stage. And when it gets there, even though sometimes you may be scared, if I got a trade 2 months from now that I'm looking at, like let's say the Fed cattle get down to 110 or something of 2020, I know I want to be long. And let's say 2 months from now, they're trading it, you know, down at that era, but everything seems so bad, why would I get in? I still stick to it, because I was waiting so patiently for that exact time frame and that correlation for them both to cross, and I'll get in the trade.
Love it. Great stuff, Mark. But we're not done yet. I have some rapid fire questions next, if you're ready for those.
I'm ready.
All right, everybody. Our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. Mark, first question for you. What trader has influenced your life the most, and why?
I would say Mike Smith and Alvin Fultz, just because they're very good fundamentalists, and they actually believe in the cattle market. They feed hundreds of thousands of head of cattle and on feed yards and everything like that. So they know it from the bottom up, and I've actually fed cattle with them to understand exactly that. So as just far as just like instincts and fundamental traders, those guys are by far the best.
How has your trading process evolved over the years?
Patience. You know, I used to, when I was on the floor, I didn't really have any patience. If I wanted to get long, I'd just get long. And now, because it's harder to trade other people's money than your own. I mean, sometimes I'll lose, you know, if I'm in a trade and my customer's in a trade, I'll get them out and I'll still be in and have $5 loss because I don't adhere to my own rules, my own trading, because I'm sometimes so bullheaded, I just think I'm going to be right. And the correct way to do it is how I did it for them, instead of how I did it for myself. So patience and waiting for your time to get in. And when you get in, know your risk reward before you implement a trade.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
Like I was saying earlier, kind of like the relief pitcher. Just, it's hard to forget. You always bring up those bad paths, and you have to have positive thinking. So if you have a bad trade, just clear your head and go on to the next one. and just don't let those, you know, the mentality of going out there the next day and it's every day is a new day. And this time just don't have the negative thoughts behind it and you'll be okay.
What was one of the hardest things for you to overcome in trading?
The electronics, the gyrations of electronics and the volatility of the cattle market. And like I said, you know, back even 15 years ago, you know, if you had a $5 move in 3 weeks in the cattle market, that was huge. Now, you know, we routinely get those kind of moves between, you know, $3 and $5 a week. When that used to be a month's work of movement, if not more in the cattle market. So that's the hardest thing to adapt to is just the volatility and that kind of stuff. Your trading strategies based off of volatility.
Favorite book about trading?
Next. I mean, all mine are not really trader books per se. I'm not really one of those guys that sits down and reads how another guy trades.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
Wow. Probably just to believe in yourself. You know, if you're sitting there and you have three or four pieces of information and they all three are pointing in the right direction, just believe in your information and the work that you've done, like my Excel spreadsheets, believe in that stuff. And then you go into the trade, believe that the trade's going to work and you're right.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, I think to know that the glory days don't last forever. So, you know, when you're young and you're trading and making money all the time and doing all these things, and at least I was grounded up. I have a great wife and two daughters, and I was successful enough to pay for their college and do all that kind of stuff and set aside money and learn that from my parents. So money management is so key in this game because I was always one of those guys where I never had a credit card debt. I never had anything because when you're a trader, and I'm sure you know this, Anthony, one day you can be fine and you go buy yourself a car, a new pair of shoes, whatever, you pay cash for it. And then it's good because it's paid for. But then the next day you could lose that money. And then if you put on a credit card, how are you going to pay that bill? So I'm still to this day, I'm not a credit card user. I barely use a debit card. I mean, I'm a cash guy. And it's still from back in those days where you made money one day, you went out and bought it, and you didn't put it on a credit card because the next day you may not be able to pay the credit card bill.
Last question for today. Favorite thing to do when you're not trading?
Hunting fish, for sure. For sure, fishing and hunting both. I love to do it. I love the outdoors. Nothing better than sitting in a tree stand waiting for a deer or fishing on a pretty sunny day, having a beer and catching some bass.
Love it. I know you're not on Twitter, but where could people go find and learn more about you on a website?
With capitaltradinggroup.com. There should be a link there for me for one of their CTA traders.
Yeah, everybody. I will put that link in the post. So if you're listening to this on YouTube or iTunes, be sure to go and check it out on our website. Mark, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.